Welcome to Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. We have another great show for you today and a one-of-a-kind guest. Yes, we have the one and only who started it all, the executive producer and creator of Ancient Aliens. We have Kevin Burns on the show. Having established in 1999 Prometheus Entertainment, it became the leader in supplying critically acclaimed, highly rated programming to the world. He's worked with History Channel, Travel Channel, Animal Planet, A&E, WeTV, National Geographic Channel. The list goes on and on. He's created top-rated docudramas such as The Curse of Oak Island, The Girls Next Door. And yes, it leads us to the one show that changed history, that brought this topic to the forefront and became a TV icon. Ancient Aliens has now been on for 14 seasons and still bringing us new information, new content, and keeping our interest every time it airs. He worked on another one of my favorites, America's Book of Secrets, and plenty more. He's going to be at AlienCon June 21st through the 23rd, where you can see him and many of the Ancient Alien cast members speaking and telling their truth. So we want to welcome our guest who started it all, the one and only Kevin Burns.
Thank you very much. That's great.
How you doing, Mr. Burns?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful, and I know our audience has been excited about this, as I am. Captain Ron, unfortunately, couldn't make it tonight. But first of all, congratulations. 14 seasons of Ancient Aliens. I mean, that's an accomplishment in itself. And I want to get right into ask this. So, Kevin, how do you keep up with new ideas that won't overlap and overrun each other? How do you do that in 14 seasons?
Well, first of all, I'm blessed to have a really great staff of people. I have two really, really strong guys who've been with me for a long time. My executive producers on the show, Max Thompson and David Silver. But, I mean, they've worked with me on a lot of other shows over the years. I mean, David's been with me since the time we were doing Biography for A&E. Max started with us when we were doing a show called Food Paradise for Travel Channel. But they work really hard. They have a great staff. They have producers who work for them. And so we didn't think, I mean, when I started Ancient Aliens, it was really meant to be a 2-hour special. And we thought that was going to be it. And then it became 5 more 2-hour specials, which was called season 1. And I thought, okay, well, that's certainly got to be it. And then they came back to me and said, can you do 10 more 1-hour shows? And I said, well, I'm out of pyramids.
Right.
I don't know what else to do. And they said, well, you don't want to do it? And I said, well, of course we'll do it. But what we found is, you know, the beauty of the show in many ways is the title of the show. Mm-hmm. Because it's Ancient Aliens. And in a way, it allows you to embrace not only kind of ancient history, prehistory, mythology, archaeology, but it allows you to kind of embrace what's going on now and in the future in terms of technology and artificial intelligence and trips to Mars and satellites and everything else. So so we have defined the show in a, you know, because obviously if extraterrestrials were, in fact, coming to Earth hundreds of or tens of thousands of years ago, they would have technology that we are only aspiring to now. So so it allows us to kind of get into a lot of areas. And it also has allowed us to kind of redefine what this was before we started the show. I mean, when we got started with Ancient Aliens, we found that there were a lot of, you know, individual enthusiasts and practitioners and theorists of ancient astronaut theory, mm-hmm. Philip Copens and,
right.
Of course, George Tsoukalos, Eric von Daniken. But a lot of these guys didn't know each other. They had never spoken to each other. Not necessarily the ones I'm mentioning, but different people had different biases, different fields of research. And so what we've done is kind of brought them together and, in a sense, defined this genre, this field of study, much more broadly than it had been defined about 10, 14 years ago when we got started.
Well, and that leads me to the thing is, I mean, we all heard of Eric Van Doniken, of course, you know, Chariots of the Gods, but how did Giorgio, and I mean, I'm sure you've told this many times, but, you know, for my audience, maybe a few don't know, but how did that come about? Because now I can't even imagine the show without him.
It's funny because, and I have told the story a few times, but this whole series came about because I had I have to some extent, although their company has changed quite a bit, but I had an extraordinary relationship with Lucasfilm. Going back to 2005 when they brought me in to produce what became a definitive documentary on the making of the original Star Wars trilogy called Empire of Dreams. And so in working with Lucasfilm, it led to several other shows that I did for them. And then they came to me and said, we're going to do the new Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and we can't show you the script, and we can't show you the movie, but we'd love you to do a documentary on Indiana Jones and the Indiana Jones films, but it's, you know, but we don't want to do a making of. And so I thought, well, if I were to approach Indiana Jones, I would say, well, why do we dig? You know, what is the reason why archaeologists do what they do? And, you know, the answer to me is somewhat simple, which is we're looking for God. We're searching for where we come from. You know, we don't really know our origin. We think we do. We struggle to come up with theories to explain it, but we don't know. So we dig and dig and dig and dig, looking for artifacts, looking for bones, looking for our history. And so we put together this two-hour show called Indiana Jones and the Ultimate Quest, which ran on the History Channel. And in approaching it, I said to my producer, look, I have to believe Eric Van Doniken is no longer with us, but find me the new Eric Van Doniken. find me the American equivalent of Eric Van Doniken. And Nikki Boella, who is my producer, she finds Giorgio Tsoukalos, who was living in San Diego, and she found that he had been a protege of Eric Van Doniken's in Switzerland. And he'd worked for Eric. He'd kind of Eric was like his mentor, and of course Giorgio was publishing this magazine called The Legendary Times Magazine, all about ancient astronaut theory. So he appeared in the Indiana Jones doc because he talked about the crystal skull and a lot of the things that the new movie was going to touch on. And when I saw the footage of Giorgio, who was a nice-looking guy, but he had this kind of big hair.
Right.
And it wasn't as big as it is now, but it was big. It was kind of like supercharged. And since I'm follicularly challenged, let's say, I am possessed of a very wide part in the middle of my head. I said, who the hell is that guy? Bring me the guy with the hair. So he came up, God bless him, he came up from San Diego, and we met. And of course, he, first of all, corrected me. He said, Eric is very much alive and well, and he talked to Eric all the time, and he gave me Eric's number and put me in touch with Eric. But as we got into talking, because I had seen when I was in high school, and dating myself, it was back in the early 1970s, I saw the documentary film Chariots of the Gods, based on Eric's book, and I was always struck by the documentary that I saw and the nature of the writing of that documentary, which was like the book, a series of rhetorical questions, and so I kind of, in my mind's eye or my mind's ear, I cribbed what I remembered of that doc as the style of the Indiana Jones doc. When I've gone back to listen to watch the Indiana Jones doc, it's very, very different. But I was kind of approaching it as I remembered Chariots of the Gods. And so I, as we talked about it with Giorgio, I said, well, do you believe this? Do you believe in ancient astronaut theory? And Giorgio said, I don't believe, I know.
Yeah, that sounds like Giorgio.
And that very much, that very much impressed me. And so we didn't have a series in mind at that time. I mean, it was really all leading up to this Indiana Jones show, which aired on History Channel, did very well. And then I had a chance meeting with a fellow who at the time, and again, we're talking about, oh, probably about 12 years ago, the fellow who was the head of programming at the History Channel, a guy by the name of David McKillop. And David was a tremendously talented guy. I always thought of him as kind of a mad genius. And I credit him with two of the greatest shows I've ever gotten to do. One was The Curse of Oak Island, which is like
That's
this phenomenally
show.
Successful show on the History Channel. But David was the first person to ever tell me about Oak Island and kind of steered me toward it. And the other one is Ancient Aliens, because I told him the story about Indiana Jones and how we approached the doc. And, of course, it had just aired at that point and it had done very well. And I said, well, basically, all I did was I cribbed what I remembered of a documentary I saw in high school based on Eric von Daniken's book, Chariots of the Gods. And David said, well, Chariots of the Gods, I love Chariots of the Gods. I would love to do a two-hour special updating Chariots of the Gods and seeing what we have learned since the publication of the book in the late 1960s. So I... you know, armed with that, we developed it as a two-hour special. We were going to call it Chariots of the Gods until we found out that Eric had kind of allowed everybody to use that title. And we were, you know, we wanted to have a title that we could kind of control. So it was someone at the network, I think it might have been David, who said, how about Ancient Aliens, and which we thought was a brilliant idea. And kind of coined that phrase as the identifier of the series. And Giorgio was in it. And, of course, through Giorgio, I got to contact and later meet Eric von Daniken, who, for me, is still the godfather of this whole genre.
Sure.
Meaning, you know, I mean, Eric is a very, very, very serious scholar, researcher. He has traveled the world, you know, and of course, you know, not everyone agrees with his theories about what things are, or what they were, or where they came from, but the theories are compelling.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
for
a
sure.
lot of his, a lot of his deductions of how these things could have come about, are most often offer the only explanation in many ways that's more like logical than, let's say, the mainstream explanations. So anyway, so it's been an extraordinary experience. By the way, when you said 14 seasons, it's so schizophrenic because if you go online or if you buy the DVDs or Blu-rays, it says 12 seasons. And it's because there was one period of time when the network was taking a season and cutting them in half and running like 8 episodes and then another 8 episodes and calling it a separate season. So if you go on Apple TV, there's 12 seasons. If you go on the network, it's 14 seasons. But it's I think it's approaching, or at least this current season, it's going to hit, I think, 200 episodes.
That's a good thing about this. It's going to live forever, and that's what I'm glad this is on tape. So we have reference for, you know, generations to come. So when things do happen, you know, you can go back and say, see, this is where our theories are now proven. And I was going to ask you, what have you learned, you know, being a part of this show that you actually – gave or made you have questions and then actually made you a believer in some things that you maybe had questions before. Is there anything that you actually learned through this and says, you know, I didn't believe before, but now I do?
Well, I'm not an ancient astronaut theorist.
Right.
I mean, I produce the show, but I try to remain objective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to come off as an advocate so much. And if anything, I'd like to think that I'm the voice of the narrator. And the narrator, because I used to write most all the scripts, and now Max does quite a bit of that with the writers that we work with. But I will still be very involved in the writing of the scripts.
Right.
But the narrator's voice is what I would say is my voice, which is an objective observer who's curious-minded and wants to know the answers but doesn't presume to have them. And so I love the fact that the theorists will offer what they believe to be answers, but the narrator will say, you know, I mean, if the narrator gives a fact, for example, we try very hard to make sure it's a verifiable fact. But if you listen to the narration is more often saying, if this is true, could this be true? And if that's true, could this also be true? And because what the narrator is doing is taking the information being given by the theorists, who are often very certain about what they believe, and the narrator is saying, could it be, you know, could it be true? Because what I want you to do is not accept the theorists at face value.
Right.
I want you to listen to them, and I want you to weigh it against your own experience. And I want you to judge for yourself what it is that makes the most sense to you. I mean, I can watch an episode where there might be, let's say, 10 or 12 things offered as theory. I might think four or five of them are totally far-fetched and I don't accept them,
right,
personally. But I'll come away from an hour and usually say, wow, there are five or six things in that hour I cannot dispute. And they have convinced me. So I don't like to dictate to an audience what to believe, but I do want the audience to think. And I think that's an extraordinary opportunity that most networks don't do.
Oh, exactly.
I have to say, it's a tremendous partnership with the History Channel because they are so wonderful about allowing us to do a show that's not kind of bogged down with a kind of an overly conservative academic way of thinking that has become now not about learning. In other words, if I look at the modern educational system, it's all about kind of force-feeding theory as fact. Mm. And I try to remind people, I said, you know, Darwin's theory of evolution is a theory.
Exactly.
The Big Bang theory is a theory. A theory is something that is possibly true, but not known to be true. So there's a lot of things that we don't know the answer to that we should still be looking for the answers. And by the way, to answer your earlier question about how do we keep doing all these shows, how does it get to 200 shows, is that we're constantly with my producers and with their staff and with the researchers. We might do, like, we might be doing our 10th show now on the Giza Pyramid.
Right.
But we tried to kind of not do the same show over and over or remake the show, but when there's new data or new information or a possibility of sending somebody like Giorgio inside, we will find a new angle on it or a new perspective or a new piece of information or how that information we might have talked about two or three seasons ago fits as part of a bigger puzzle piece. Because I think now, as you watch more and more and more episodes, you're starting to get a kind of a mosaic of, you know, an incredible, incredible theory that only becomes more profound with every episode. And so going back to your earlier question about my own beliefs. Look, it's you know, I was raised Catholic, like a lot of ancient astronaut theorists, as it turned out. Because Catholicism, at least when I was growing up, was so uniquely metaphysical.
Exactly. Yeah.
In other words, you know, it's one of the religions that was always very kind of open to notions of, you know, whether it's transubstantiation or virgin birth. I mean, it's very open to metaphysical notions. And, but like most Catholics, especially those that grew up in the 60s and 70s, as I did, you find that not only has the world around you become more and more secular and more cynical, but that even Catholicism no longer answers the questions that, as you get older, you start to keep asking. And in ancient astronaut theory, I approach it from the standpoint of an open-minded skeptic, meaning I'm not a cynic. I'm not a debunker by any means. I do want to know the answers to the questions we ask. But I do find that ancient astronaut theory offers some really pretty bold ideas that could very well be true. And so for me, that's, you know, I love sitting with the people like, you know, David Childress or William Henry or the various contributors that we have, you know, Jason Martell and Linda Moulton Howe, and they're all fascinating and they're all very different and they approach their field of study from different perspectives, but it really makes you think, and it's been a very exciting journey. So what have I learned personally? I started this series feeling that we don't really know anything. And now I'm convinced of it.
Well,
meaning I do think the world is more wondrous than we think. I think the universe is more complex than we think. And I think that mankind is unique and special, unlike what now modern science wants you to believe, which is that we are nothing. We're no better than, we're no different than. And I don't think that really adds up.
No, I definitely think we're very special. I think we're a special, not saying we're the only ones like us, but I think we are, you know, special.
No, but when people tend to say, you know, oh, we're no different than any other animal on the planet, we are. You know, no other animal creates music, art, literature, written language. I mean, we are very unique on this planet, and that only makes you wonder, you know, why. Now, it doesn't invalidate the integrity of other living things, but man is unique. You know, why do we wear clothes? Why do we build houses? Why do we create art, music, and literature and poetry? Why do we create religion? I mean, we are not just like, you know, dolphins and gorillas.
Right.
and so it makes you wonder, was there some kind of a unique spark that created man? Was that God, or is that an ancient alien intervention? Is it a fluke of evolution, which a lot of conventional scientists would have you believe?
Right.
But that's as logical as saying that a chimpanzee can type a Shakespeare sonnet if you leave them in a room alone with a typewriter long enough. So in other words, what makes more sense? Does it make sense to think that when we die we're nothing, or that this wondrous world for which most mathematical equations have a solution and is based on balance and not chaos might actually give our lives purpose rather than absolute no purpose at all? So yes, I think ancient astronaut theory, and by extension ancient aliens, has the audience it does because it compels people, especially people in this culture, which has become a very secular and cynical culture,
amen
to
that,
connect a much more profound level than you do normally.
Well, We have a lot of people in the chat room, and I know when we, you know, Giorgio, you ask him a question, it's like he can just pretty much answer anything. I'm going to ask you this question from the chat room real quick, and just because I want to see what your take is, and I just it stood out to me. And what is your take on aliens killing off the dinosaurs in order for the Homo sapiens to emerge? Do you think that is possible, and have you done an episode on that?
We did do an episode on that. In fact, I think I was the one who came up with the idea.
Ah, there we go.
Well, because you know, I will say this: we you know, obviously, we're always thinking of new ideas, and then you know, and of course, as you put pieces together, and you do everything from shows about how, you know, why were the dinosaurs extinct? Well, presumably, some meteor came to Earth and caused this enormous shift in climate and kicked up enough dust, you know, that it clouded the earth and, right. and the food dried up and the dinosaurs died. And in other words, the conventional theory is that some enormous meteor or, you know, struck the earth. But the Gulf of Mexico, being the shape that it's in, might very well be some enormously large crater created by something that hit the Earth. Well, then you do another episode that says, well, meteors could be manipulated or engineered as satellites. And then you think, well, what if that was the case with the dinosaur? In other words, was the Earth cleared in some way so that the alien or the extraterrestrial entities could use it as a kind of a laboratory or plant new life forms on it without the dinosaurs interfering with it. Now, that's a bold and far-fetched theory, but it's an intriguing one. Mm-hmm. And so I would say to my staff, is there any validity to a theory that says dinosaurs, extinction or extermination?
Hmm.
And the more we got into it, the more we found that it was a fascinating idea that other people were beginning to embrace. So again, do we say, you know, because we, you know, there's a lot of people out there who go, you know, that's the show that tells you aliens killed the dinosaurs. And it's like, no, that's the show that tells you how do we know they didn't.
Right. You're putting a question.
In other words, and yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's like truth be told. I always say just because we always try to answer questions that lead to more questions. And that's what leads for people to find their own journey on it. So,
well, yeah. And it doesn't mean that everything is just random. Like
right.
we don't believe in anything. It's just that, it's just that I think that by compelling you to use your brain and compelling you to think of these things, which, you know, in some ways, you know, religion, at least at its best, invites you to think in terms of metaphysical terms, you know, about a wondrous universe filled with miracles, open to the idea that anything is possible. But what has happened, I think, to conventional science, to mainstream academia, is that, you know, I think they're so indebted to grant money that everybody has had a vested interest in putting periods at the end of all the sentences. In other words, they are paid to come up with conclusions, and so then they have a vested interest in those conclusions. And I think something has been, you know, hurt along the way, and I think that we've lost touch with that side of ourselves. I mean, what's fascinating to me about Ancient Aliens is how in certain other countries where the show airs, it's considered, you know, like the biggest thing. Like I have a friend who lives in India, and we've done a couple of shoots in India. And this friend I went to film school with, and he said to me, Mr. Burns, you know, you have finally gotten smart. You have finally done a show that makes sense.
That's hilarious.
And I said, what do you mean? He said, it is the number one show in India. Because for you, this is mythology. For us, it is history.
That's awesome.
And when you really get into the Hindu culture and the Hindu religion, which is all about Vimanas and extraterrestrials, they look at the ancient astronauts or the ancient alien show as validation for everything that they've been taught to believe, as in their, not only in their religion, but in their culture, as being totally, totally factual. So, so it is interesting to see who embraces the series and what religions and cultures find it totally compatible.
And it definitely is universal. I mean, this subject matter is universal. And like even people in the chat room said, hey, Tony, tell Kevin Ancient Aliens great. It's very thought-provoking, which, I mean, it must give you satisfaction that you created something that has affected so many people all over the world. Which
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm very proud of it. And the only other thing I would add is as gratified as we are by certain cultural praise that we get, is I'm very stung, especially when the academic community and certain other people will cite us for being racist or colonialist, because they'll say, well, you want to deny the people in Egypt or South America or Central America, and I find their attitude, by the way, somewhat racist and condescending, to kind of think that somehow they are, you know, that they need to kind of validate the architectural or engineering achievements of people from the third world, as if there's some kind of paternalism they need to exhibit. But we're not denying anything. Meaning, we're not denying the credit for building pyramids to whoever or whatever culture lived in that part of what is now Egypt. We're not denying the cultural integrity of the people who lived in Central America or Mexico. But if you look at the pyramids themselves, and you look at the pyramids in South America and Central America and the cultures of what we, you know, call the third world, those cultures are all based on extraterrestrial origin.
Right.
By the way, as is Judeo-Christian culture and religion, as is Buddhist, as is Muslim, as is Hindu, that the idea of beings coming from the sky and creating man or giving man wisdom or knowledge is written on those pyramids and tombs and temples. So all we're doing is saying, what if what they wrote on those tombs and temples was not mythology, but was history? And, like, why do we assume that what they believed were the origin stories of their culture was made up? And because my argument to those same academics who were very indicting of our show is to say, well, wait a minute. On the one hand, you want to say that these people were gifted with extraordinary knowledge of architecture and physics and mathematics and astrology. And yet, on the other hand, you dismiss what they said as their history as being fanciful notions of people who were so unsophisticated that they didn't know where the sun and the stars came from, and so they created these quaint notions of mythology. I said, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that they're geniuses, but they don't know reality from fantasy. And so what we're doing is, if anything, we are validating the people who built the pyramids and the tombs and the temples by treating their stories, which are all about beings coming from the stars, as saying, what if it's true? What if this is history? What if the religions of the world, you know, especially, you know, again, growing up Catholic, virgin birth, and, you know, I mean, God bless me, but the story of Jesus is one of the greatest extraterrestrial stories in the history of the Western world.
If you read between the lines, you can read it right there.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, when you, again, when I mean, Jesus supposedly rose from the dead and ascended bodily into heaven. Well, I would argue, to where? He is by definition, as angels are, an extraterrestrial being, meaning a being, an entity, not of this earth. It's not denying, the specialness or the religious foundation of it. What you're doing is you're questioning, what if the Old Testament and the stories of Moses and the miracles and the burning bush and Mount Sinai, what if it could be, and this is kind of getting into where Eric Von Daniken goes, could Mount Sinai have been a gateway to a portal, and could Moses have received the knowledge he had, mm-hmm. i.e. the Ten Commandments, through some kind of extraterrestrial means? Now, again, we're not saying that's true. What we're saying is, could that be an explanation for the miracles in the Bible?
I always thought that.
Up to the other things that we've talked about,
yeah.
It's a compelling argument.
I've always thought that. Even as a child, I always asked questions, wondering what if angels really weren't extraterrestrials. For some reason, that just felt right to me. And
The stories of the Old Testament, especially we did a series for the History Channel called Bible Secrets Revealed, and we interviewed dozens of very, very, very learned, academically sound Bible scholars. Well, what's fascinating is when you really learn about the books of the Bible that were purged from the Bible, and you get into the original translations of the Bible into the ancient Greek and the Aramaic, and you realize that the stories that have, for the most part, been cut out of the Bible were mm-hmm. even more profoundly extraterrestrially based than the ones that have remained, and those are pretty profound. I mean, and this is, the Book of Enoch, which the Ethiopians still put in their Bible, but the Book of Enoch is the entire foundation for Eric Von Daniken. I mean, he read it as a teenage, young teenage man, and it is the formation of ancient astronaut theory is what he read in the Book of Enoch.
Well, before we get out of here, because I know time's flying away from us, we have to talk about AlienCon coming up June 21st through 23rd. You're going to be there. Again, without your creation, this wouldn't even come about, as a lot of other conferences around the country. So, I mean, it really contributes to, because you've made rock stars out of so many of these authors and researchers and scientists. It's now you're bringing them together and bringing not just, the all these people with the audience, and where they can ask questions, face to face and hear the latest discoveries. And what do you expect from AlienCon this year that's going to be even better than last year? Because it was pretty great last year.
Well, thank you. The idea came about, I was with Giorgio. We went to Roswell, New Mexico about 6 years ago to a small convention that was out there. And it was so obvious to me that Giorgio was a huge draw, even in a place like Roswell, that I said, we really have something here. And I wanted to see the fans, to be honest. I wanted to see the fans of the show. I wanted them to ask questions. I thought they would be a good way for us to essentially get ideas for the show, hear what they wanted the show to be, get a sense of what they are excited by. In fact, in this upcoming season, a lot of the ideas we're talking about, Element 115, Antarctica, the Badlands Guardian, mm-hmm. are all things that came out of AlienCon last year.
Wow.
So a lot of we did an episode last season called The Taken, based on people's stories of being abducted, and that all came out of AlienCon. We shot it at AlienCon. So And this year we have William Shatner coming.
I know. I can't wait.
He was a guest in our season finale, and we struck up a friendship. I had worked with him some time before, but now I'm doing a new series with him called The Unexplained, and he's a tremendously fascinating guy. It's going to be a lot of fun to have him there. But no, I think this Alien Con is just going to be an expansion. I mean, it is as evolving and as much fun, I would like to say, as the show itself. It's kind of the show in 3D. Mm-hmm. It's an extension of an Ancient Aliens episode or marathon, more than likely.
And you always bring the greatest speakers. We had a great time interviewing many of the speakers last year. We saw you, and I think it was you, Giorgio, and Eric on stage together. That was one of the best. Lecture, and it was so much fun, and just to see you guys interact with each other. So, but I know we got to get out here, but thank you, Kevin, so much for being on the show, and congratulations for everything.
Anytime. This is great. Thank you very much.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please go if you haven't got your tickets. Pick up tickets to Alien Con. I know there's an Alien Con, I believe, in Dallas. Is there any other Alien Cons coming up besides Dallas and L.A., Kevin?
I'm sure there are, but I don't know that they've been booked or scheduled yet. But
got it.
But definitely L.A. and on the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, I think it is.
So, but everybody, please share this. We appreciate you as always. Truth be told, wouldn't be anything without you guys, and it wouldn't be anything without Kevin Burns here, because, again, he's the one that's, you know, sparked our interest even more once he put Ancient Aliens on air. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. We have Kevin Burns. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.